Well, good morning and welcome to Kerry in Ireland, South Kerry. And I've come to a place which is the haunt of one of the greatest scoundrels in modern Irish history. An unnamed scoundrel. But I'm actually in a place called Park na Silla, which is by the sea, and I'm here for the weekend. And it's very fitting that in this place that I personally associate with the scoundrel, I'm going to read you a poem by a very radical anti-scoundrel person. And the poetry comes from a collection called The Parting. And the poet's name is Patrick Stack. And I declare an interest. I am a good friend of Patrick Stack, a collaborator. And I rate him very highly as a human being, as a poet, and as a general good egg. And I'm going to read you from, to begin with, some quite trenchant stuff written in the foreword to his collection, a collection which was published in 2013. This collection is called The Parting. So this is prose, and then I'm going to go on to Patrick Stack's poetry. But I want to read you the first paragraph of a piece of writing by a guy called Fred Johnston. Fred Johnston is himself a poet, lives in County Clare in Ireland, as Patrick Stack does, although Patrick the Stack name is well associated with Kerry. So here we are. This is the foreword to the collection, and it'll give you a flavour. And after you've heard this, you'll either decide you don't want to listen to any of Patrick Stack's poetry, or else you'll decide that there's nothing that you want to listen to more than how the poetry follows this kind of an introduction. So here is Fred Johnston to start. Fred Johnston, S-T-O-N, to start. Contemporary Irish poetry, in the main, avoids political or social confrontation. That's the start. It avoids political and or social confrontation. Lots of poets do that too, where, a lot of our associations with poets are to do with beauty and nature and anything but political or social confrontation. Anyway, that's just the first sentence in the introduction here. The innate, Fred carries on, the innate conservatism of Irish society. Now, definitely, Irish society has an innate conservatism. I mean, there has never been any kind of revolution in Ireland. There's been hardly any rebellion in Ireland. It's a very, very compliant, conforming society, as you would expect a little island off the west coast of Europe to be like. Oh, I'm being interrupted by my daughter. I'm about to read some poetry, darling. So the innate conservatism of Irish society, which has continued through the decades in spite of massive societal changes at home and in the rest of the world. Fair enough, Fred. Has persevered in producing innately conservative art. Innately conservative art produced in Ireland. And in the few instances where individual artists have challenged what's lazily termed the consensus, yeah, words like a poet. I mean, Fred's a poet, and describing what's going on in Ireland as loads and loads of consensus is indeed lazy. Although we do need lazy terminology, I think we can't always be working hard to be terribly precise. But anyway, the generalisation, the consensus in Ireland. Anyway, I'm losing myself here. In the few instances where individual artists have challenged it, quote. Oh no, we're going on. And recently this applies most directly to visual artists. So Fred is saying that visual artists are actually the people in the lead of challenging the consensus. The consequent furore, lamentably parochial and wary of the sanction of state funders. Oh look, hang on a minute. He's saying there has been furore. Yes, there has been. And he's going to give an example in a second. Lamentably parochial. Well, that's Fred nailing his trousers to the mast. Ireland is a parish place, to be fair to it now. It's everything in Ireland is parochial. And I actually think that it's inevitably parochial. And my own stance these days would be to say, let us celebrate the parish, but let us actually strip back the veneer of the respectability within which the parish has been wrapped. Let us bring out into the open the valley of the squinting windows, what really happens in the Irish parish. And let's actually basically celebrate it and understand it. Anyway, Fred goes on about, and wary of the sanction of state funders. Well, the state in Ireland gives money to artists, and everybody is kind of running around themselves hoping to get a slice of that state funding. The complication, of course, is that if you don't get the state funding, you rail and you're angry and you're generally pissed off with the fact that you didn't get it. But an awful lot of people are dipping into the trough of state funding in Ireland, whether it is for startups funded through Enterprise Ireland, which is a great organisation, he hastens to add, for some people. But the downside of Enterprise Ireland and the Arts Council in Ireland is that if you're given handouts, you may often, you know, be beholden to the mentality of the people who are giving you the handouts. Anyway, not everyone has a Leopold II, wasn't it, who gave Wagner his money without any strings attached. Anyway, this is what Fred goes on to say. The artist has found his or her work withdrawn from gallery walls. Now, Fred is probably more knowledgeable than I am about particular examples of artists who have had their work withdrawn from gallery walls on the grounds that it has in some way scandalized or been offensive or is too radical. And here we come to the great example in modern times that I can think of. This is Fred Johnston again. Even a cartoonish lampooning of a sitting Taoiseach, harking to the honoured tradition of 18th century satirists, caused uproar. Okay, let's break this down. Even the cartoonish lampooning of a sitting Taoiseach. Well, the sitting Taoiseach was sitting on the loo with his trousers down. It was great art, wonderful controversy a few years ago. I really wish I knew where the artist had gone to. That's a great case study if you want to dip into it. Brian Cowan, who was a sitting Taoiseach, absolutely fair game to be lampooned, you know, as a buffoon. In fact, the poor man actually, you know, played the ultimate card in Ireland, which is, oh, I didn't mind being lampooned, but it upset my wife and my family to see me depicted with my trousers down sitting on the loo. And indeed, as Fred says, this 18th century satirists were very powerful people. Actually, 19th century satirists, for that matter. Second half of the 19th century, all the work in Punch, I would refer you to, caused uproar. It certainly did cause uproar. Anyway, that is a way of reading the first paragraph of Fred Johnston that I never intended. I started off intending to read you the whole thing from beginning to end. Now, I'm going to read you a little bit further on what Fred Johnston says about the poetry of Patrick Stack. Because Fred, despite the fact that he often writes in long sentences, is really a great voice coming out of the west of the Shannon. I know he rails against the Belfast-Dublin axis in Irish poetry, which privileges everything around the capital against the what Fred would say is the more radical voices coming out of west of the Shannon. Anyway, this is what Fred has to say about Patrick Stack, who is west of the Shannon as far as Fred is concerned, because he also lives in Clare and is a member of, an active member and a leading member of the Three-Legged Poets, which is quite a little troupe of great poets, I have to say. Here we go. The poetry of Patrick Stack is often shocking. Read aloud by the poet himself, it makes little attempt to toss an aspirin down the throat of its inherent anger. It does not set out to please the listener or the reader. It does not mug for laughs. The best of it permits us to think and be disturbed. What a boon in this mummified era. That's real Fred. In this mummified era, the luxury of being disturbed. Patrick Stack's observations on the Irish world suggest that a revolution of the spirit is only possible when it is acknowledged that the spirit is in need of transformation. Now that's powerful. A revolution of the spirit is only possible when it is acknowledged that the spirit is in need of transformation. Interesting. When I started to read that, and this is my first time reading it at all, really, I thought, I'm not sure it's a revolution of the spirit we need. I think it's a revolution of the bonfires we need. There have been so many terrible things happen in Ireland that people have talked about. I think action is actually needed more so than further chatter, but that's another story. Complacent ears will hear what they wish to hear. They may even long to be entertained. But this poetry, the like of which is not being written or published in present days in a humbled Ireland, threatens our ideas about what is acceptable revolution and demands a violence of belief. Wow, I love that. Demands a violence of belief. I'm going to stop because, you know, you're itching now, or you're not itching now, to hear Patrick Stack himself. And I certainly am. And this is the first short poem in the collection. And this is Patrick Stack in my voice. And the poem is called Only Through Transgression. Only through transgression can the human spirit escape the cage of bullshit ideology has built to enslave it. Only through transgression can the human spirit escape the cage of bullshit ideology has built to enslave it. Now let me draw your attention to a few features of this poem, this tiny short poem, just in case you might say to yourself, well, that's just a simple piece of prose. The poem is arranged in, with a title, Only Through Transgression. The poem is arranged in five lines. And the first line is the same as the title of the poem, Only Through Transgression. Can the human spirit escape the cage of bullshit ideology has built to enslave it? So you'll see then that the four subsequent lines all end in the aspirant T, it, shit, built, it. And, you know, there is a sense in which when you are expressing anger, you aspirate your language. You choose words which will spit it out. So Patrick Stack is spitting out his spirit in a cage of bullshit. He is encaged, no doubt. Ideology, I-D-O-L-O-G, is the word that Patrick Stack uses. And he's very, very familiar with many ideologies, being a man who himself is an extreme left-wing person. Actually, he's not so extreme, but he is actually a left-wing person. Ideology has built to enslave it. I think it's a superb piece of writing in five lines, introducing the whole thing. Now let me take you to another poem, the one that my brother-in-law... Sorry, let me interrupt for 1 second and check. You need me or you're very happy to stay here? I'm reading from a collection of poems by my great friend, and this is the one that was read at the breakfast table this morning to Grandad and, no, certainly Grandma. And it's called Unholy Ireland. Unholy Ireland. So here's Patrick Stack's poem. Unholy Ireland, I hate you as you are. When will you learn that slogans are but meaningless excuses for not thinking? When will you realise the Celtic cross at Clonmacnoise is nothing more than a symbol of a long dead past? When will you expunge the mass hysteria and superstition? The so-called Taoiseach and his living dead in Leinster House still bleed you dry, as did the crown, no more, no less. With an ellipsis at the end, a very significant ellipsis, three dots, meaning there is more to be said. So this is the poet saying that he hates the status quo in Ireland as it is. The first line, calling it unholy Ireland, is of course in a direct attack on, you know, the holy Ireland of saints and scholars, the fantasy that we were brought up on, that Patrick Stack grew up on, that I grew up on, saying that Ireland was a holy place, you know, full of Christian virtue, of humility, kindness, tenderness, love. It's not a place full of those things. It is a place that has those things in it, but it is ideology to say that it is an island, a holy island. So I hate you as you are is Patrick Stack's initial statement. That's the first two lines in the poem. The second part of the poem is structured into three lines. When will you learn that slogans are but meaningless excuses for not thinking? Okay, slogans, yeah, generalizations are meaningless excuses for not thinking. Yeah, parroted phrases, unthoughtful assumptions and remarks. The detritus of conversation. Now, and this is where Patrick moved, the poem moves to its most powerful four-liner right in the middle. When will you realise the Celtic cross at Clonmacnoise? Now, the Celtic cross at Clonmacnoise is both a concrete thing, a place, very core Christian place in Ireland. The Celtic cross there, you know, so this is not just a concrete place, but it's symbolic of the whole edifice, is nothing more than a symbol of a long dead past. So, a long dead past. Clonmacnoise, a centre of learning, a place that deserves great respect, is a long dead past, right? Not sure when it really flourished. And then we go to, when will you expunge? And that's a great, expunge is not. Not all poets use words like expunge. A lot of poets use nice, gentle, liquid words. Expunge is a harshness, and it involves, you know, grabbing something and destroying it, basically. The mass hysteria and superstition. Well, it's interesting. We're talking about the Celtic cross and superstition, mass hysteria, and we're talking about slogans, and we're talking about, you know, images of unholy Ireland. Holy wells come to mind. The way the Christians came in and layered their power and their civilization on top of pagan Ireland, which was full of wells, which were holy, where the fairies were to be found, where magic happened, where the unconscious was as real as the conscious. And then we get to the last three lines. By the way, just in case anyone misunderstands, that phrase, where the unconscious is as real as the conscious, is mine, not Patrick Stack. In case he'll be associated with it, probably wouldn't mind, but there, that's just speculation. The so-called Taoiseach. Now, that is a very interesting one. Taoiseach is an Irish word, Gaelic word, for basically leader. I'm not sure, Patrick would understand better than me, all the connotations of Taoiseach. But the so-called leader and his living dead in Leinster House. Now, the living dead has, you know, all sorts of connotations that, you know, I can see ghouls coming at me. The living dead. Leinster House is where laws are made in Ireland, basically. That's where the Dáil is. That's where the building is called Leinster House. Still bleed you dry, and this is a statement, a directly antagonistic statement against the the coterie of Irish politicians, Irish